Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. I'm Bridget Bergen from the WNYC and Gothamist newsrooms, filling in for Brian, who's off today. It's been over a year since we've had to think about things like being beach body ready, or what a critical relative might say about our weight at a family gathering. And though it's great we get to soon see our relatives, it's less exciting to think that anxiety around weight in our bodies will return too. Many media outlets are making that anxiety worse, publishing stories about how much weight people gained over quarantine, and diet companies are cashing in on that narrative, offering promotional deals to help people lose that dreaded COVID-15. And while it's true many of us have turned to comfort eating over the past year, and many of our bodies may have changed due to being inside and being under enormous stress, it's important to remember that a changing body does not equal failure. Here with me now is someone who thinks about this a lot, Virginia Soule Smith. She's a journalist who covers weight stigma and diet culture, the author of the book The Eating Instinct and the newsletter Burnt Toast. Hi, Virginia. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much for having me.
In addition to the past year being isolating and tragic for obvious reasons, how much do you think it's also been a relief for some people not to have to constantly worry about weight judgments or, quote, measuring up to certain standards?
Absolutely. This has come up a lot in my reporting. You know, there was a lot of talk in the beginning about everyone stopping wearing pants and switching to sweatpants and comfy things. And a lot of folks said, you know, it was really nice not to be in constricting clothes and to just sort of let my body breathe and let my body be and not have that anxiety around, you know, having to sort of look a certain way when we go out into the world. I think it's been a real relief for folks. At the same time, I will say things like Zoom have also increased some body anxiety. I've certainly talked to folks saying, you know, the sort of checking of your appearance on, you know, like if you spend a lot of your day on Zoom, it's like you're looking at yourself a lot more than you ever did. So it's a mixed bag. But I think that relief has been there for lots of folks, which is why now there's so much anxiety about reentry.
You wrote recently in an article, quote, "I've decided when it's safe to reenter the world, my sweatpants are coming with me because I'm not planning to get my pre-pandemic body back, and you don't have to either." And I think some people might hear that and think that's a radical idea. Is that right?
Oh, yes. I think it strikes a lot of people as very radical and makes people very nervous. You know, we think of we so often think of weight gain as a sign of failure, as a sign of giving up, letting ourselves go. That's the cultural narrative we've been sold. And we forget that often whatever's happening with your weight is just at most a symptom of sort of the larger things that you're dealing with. We are surviving a collective global trauma right now. If our bodies are changing, it may be a symptom of how this larger trauma is impacting us, but changing our weight is not going to heal our trauma. It's not going to make any of the things we're all struggling with easier. It's only going to give us this new thing to obsess over and this measure, you know, this thing to try to measure up to that's going to be really difficult.
Listeners, I want to open up the phones for anyone out there who is feeling anxious about their weight and body post-quarantine. I'm going to throw myself in that category. The number is 646-435-7280. Did you feel a brief reprieve from judgment over your weight or appearance over the past year? And are you feeling sad to see that aspect of the pandemic go? And if your weight or appearance did change over the past year, how do you feel about it? Is that anxiety making it more difficult to see people that you would otherwise love to see? Or are you embracing your new size and thinking it's a marker of a difficult year that you and your body survived? The number is 646-435-7280. My guest has also written a lot about kids and dieting culture. So we will also want to hear from you if you've had any stresses or successes around how you talk to your kids about food and weight this year. Has all this time together been good for your eating habits as a family? Or has pandemic anxiety made meal planning and structure around food more difficult? The number 646-435-7280, and my guest is Virginia Soule Smith. She's a journalist who covers weight stigma and diet culture, the author of the book The Eating Instinct, and the newsletter Burnt Toast. Virginia, in recent months, major news outlets like the New York Times and the Washington Post reported on a study that found that Americans gained 1.5 pounds per month on average during the pandemic. And you and others found faults in the data, but also in how the data was reported. Can you walk us through that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the thing about that study and most of the other studies that have come out saying, look how much weight everybody's gained, is we're relying on self-reported data. So that's a very unreliable way to collect this data because, you know, we don't know that everybody has the same scale in their house, that they got on it at the same time of day. You know, there's so many ways that the data is not being sort of collected in a very systematic and scientific way. The other thing is, I believe that study was the one that framed the question as, did you gain more weight than you intended? Which is a very loaded way to ask that question in a culture where we never intend to gain weight, right? We're told never to do that. So, you know, I'm actually surprised the answer wasn't like 90% of people saying yes, because I don't think we ever really give ourselves permission to let our bodies change. So I think that's a big piece of the puzzle. You know, speaking more broadly, we're not going to have clear data on what happened with Americans' weight for quite a while. You know, the numbers we really look to are the data collected by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And a lot of that data they simply couldn't do in the last year. You know, they do these surveys every 2 years, but they weren't able to sort of be out in the field collecting their data in the same way. So we may not have the sort of solid numbers on what's happened for a while. But the other thing is, again, to say, okay, even if as a population we all gained weight, what does that mean for you as an individual? And even as a population we gained weight, like, as a population, we survived a pandemic. That is the real victory here. Right. So we have to sort of, these headlines that really beef this up as this huge trauma, I just think are so missing the point. I mean, we know what the trauma is. Mm-hmm. The trauma is how many hundreds of thousands of Americans we've lost and how the rest of us are trying to go on and rebuild. And so, to make it all about weight, it completely makes sense. It's what our culture tells us to do when we're stressed out, particularly women, particularly parents are told to really obsess over food and body size. But it's not a helpful obsession. It's a really, really harmful obsession.
Let's go to the phones. Morgan in Clark, New Jersey. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So much of what you're saying is resonating with me because leading up to the pandemic, I was on a personal health journey trying to heal my relationship with food, but I also lost close to 100 pounds and I felt so empowered. And then the pandemic happened and my mental health was like out the window and I regained 50 pounds and I'm struggling to be compassionate with myself and I feel that anxiety.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
Worrying about seeing your family again, even the Zooms, my double chin. It's
Zoom
hard
angles
to not
are hard
assign
for all
value.
Of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a really common experience, Morgan. Thank you for sharing that. I think, you know, go back to this concept of, you know, look at what you have survived in the last year. Anything you had to do for your mental health in the last year, whether that was more comfort eating, more sleep, more anything, that was a good choice for your health. That was a health promoting decision because you made it here. And that's also not to say that folks who, you know, didn't survive the pandemic made bad decisions. It's just to say, you know, like you have done what you needed to do to survive in the last year. And there's really a lot to be proud of there. And what I think we all need to do is separate this idea that our value is defined by the weight. The weight may have changed. Your worth has not changed. That's a really important message to keep coming back to. And when we think about seeing new people, you know, one thing I think we all can be doing is sort of checking in with people ahead of time and just saying, you know, I'm not feeling so great about my body right now. This has been such a weird year. I can't wait to see you, but I am feeling nervous about my body. I'm betting most people, if there are people who love you and support you, are going to A, probably say, yeah, me too, you know, and also going through that, or B, just be, you know, able to sort of then meet you in a more supportive place, especially, you know, we all have people in our lives, whether it's a mom or a grandparent or another relative who's prone to making body comments. If you can set a boundary up front and just say, I can't wait to see you. I'm so excited. I don't want to talk about bodies. I think that's a really important form of self-care right now.
Morgan, thank you so much for calling and sharing your story. And, you know, congratulations on surviving this pandemic as we are celebrating we all have done this past year. Eileen in Weehawken, let's Welcome to WNYC. Hi.
Hi. Well, I have a lot of identification with all these components. I have a history of recovering from disordered eating and body stuff and mind stuff and obsession compulsion. And I noticed on one hand a lot of gratitude for kind of the absorption of many of the things that I'm hearing are useful, and which doesn't mean that they didn't still come to my mind, but that I'm identifying with the acceptance and compassion that I'm hearing as a tool. But one of my I would say my experience has been not in tremendous. I didn't regress to old ways of, you know, the patterns of my disorder, but under moving has been something that has been my not silver lining this year. Mm-hmm. And just less fitness. I'm older, you know, I hit Medicare in pandemic year, and, you know, I had found ways of moving at a gym in a pool situation that had become, that I was willing to do and useful, and that went out the window. I noticed my resistance to going out and just moving for its own sake, or even staying in and picking up some weights. You know, that's still something I found resistance to. So that territory I could note, but I also I benefited from the Zoom communities of healing, of recovery communities that became accessible during this time, which probably really helped me navigate. So
Eileen,
I identify with a Yeah.
Thank you so much. I know it's complicated, and it seems like one version of what works and what supports us. Let's go to Arthur in Brooklyn. Arthur, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking me.
Thank you for joining us.
So I'm in my mid-30s. I have a forward-facing job as an educator. I've recently, literally just at the beginning of the month, went back into the classroom for the first time and was able to see my students. And over the course of this pandemic, I put on about 2 sizes. I always considered myself to be, you know, a relatively fit person. But over the course of the pandemic, I feel like I came down to maybe it's like the worst shape of my life. Hearing my students like make comments, nothing like particularly too snide, but it's definitely sticking in my head. As I'm getting to this point in my age, as the world is opening back up and I have to go and buy new clothes and see that my body doesn't look the same, and just thinking about, is this the second half of my life? Is this what I'm looking forward to? Because I honestly don't know. I don't know if it's because of COVID, where I don't feel like the push to really go out and exercise and push myself. So I'm just really just balancing that, right? The ideas from outside, my own internal ideas about myself and what I should look like and those expectations. And it is bringing a lot more anxiety than I thought beforehand. I didn't take much thought into it. But I guess it wasn't until I was actually in front of students.
Yeah.
And people are seeing me rather than behind a screen.
Arthur,
where it really started to.
Thank you so much for calling in and sharing that story. I suspected something that a lot of listeners can relate to as we are beginning to, you know, reemerge, and whether it's going back to workplaces or going back to see family and friends, and that, you know, particularly one of the things you mentioned, that idea of, you know, going into the closet, finding clothes that don't fit and having to decide, do you go out and buy new clothes? You know, Virginia, you talked to an eating disorder specialist and fashion blogger about this question. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think it's really important, to whatever extent your budget allows, even if it's just one pair of pants, one outfit, to, you know, invest in clothes that fit your body where it is right now. I think so often clothes are a really big piece of our trauma. We hold on to them for a long time, and that, you know, it's holding on to these expectations of what your body used to be. You know, when you frame that as like, is this the second half of my life? I immediately thought maybe yes, but also quite likely no. Bodies are always changing, and we're often told that our bodies shouldn't change, that we should somehow like be thin in high school and be thin forever and be really fit and, you know, maintain this always. And that's a myth sold to us by the diet industry. That's not how human bodies work. You know, anyone who's had a baby, you know, aging, there's all these different things that happen to our bodies that change it. So I think it's really important to sort of say, okay, this is where my body is right now. Let's not get hung up on what's going to happen in the future, because that's not really in our control. And, you know, it also might be helpful to understand that how you eat and exercise only impacts your body shape so much. You know, about 60% of our body size is determined by genetics. Larger environmental factors, such as global pandemics, have a big control over these things too. So, you know, as much as you're sold this idea that like, this is my problem to get out and fix, we know that 95% of dieters regain the weight they lose within the next 5 years. We know that there's no safe and durable way to lose weight in the long term. And so there's really no need to be pursuing that goal. That treatment plan is not going to work. Investing in where you are right now and how you can feel good about the body you have now, I think, is a much better way forward.
And let's quickly, we have time for one more question. We have Paula in Westchester. Paula, welcome to WNYC. What's your question for Virginia?
Hi, Virginia. I was dealing with a child with an eating disorder right before we went into quarantine. And that quarantine actually really supported his healing and getting back into healthy eating. But I'm worried about two things. Like, one is, what really is healthy eating? There's emotionally healthy eating, and then there's nutritionally healthy eating. And I feel like the emphasis we've placed on kids' obesity and healthy eating really has fed into teen eating disorders. And now
Absolutely.
That we're back to normal life, like, how do I not control every bite of food that goes into his mouth? How do I trust him to continue on a healthy eating trajectory? Like, there's two things going on. Sorry to bombard you.
No, you're hitting on really important issues. I mean, the pandemic has definitely fueled a rise in eating disorders, particularly for teenagers, for a lot of reasons. And, you know, kids who were already struggling, you know, maybe struggling much more now that they're now navigating this new transition. You're also right that being home was really good for a lot of folks in active eating disorder recovery, especially if they're doing a family-based treatment program where, you know, you were just in your house and just navigating food in the smaller way. To whatever extent you can reach out to your treatment team and get support for navigating this transition, I think this is going to be a really challenging time for a lot of folks. I do want to speak to your question about emotionally healthy eating versus physically healthy eating. You know, these two concepts should not be as diametrically opposed as diet culture tells us they are. And, you know, the concept I encourage folks to look into is intuitive eating. The book by Evelyn Tribble is a great place to start. This is not the approach I would suggest for someone in active recovery for a restrictive eating disorder. They usually need a lot more support. But for people who are trying to recover from dieting in general, or who are in a more solid place with their recovery, this is a great place to go, because it talks about how you start to listen to your body and honor your body cues, and that guides you towards a nutritional way of eating that's also emotionally supportive.
We'll have to leave it there with Virginia Soul-Smith. She's a journalist who covers weight stigma and diet culture, the author of the book The Eating Instinct and the newsletter Burnt Toast. You've been listening to The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I'm Bridget Bergen, WNYC's senior political correspondent, filling in for Brian today. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.